The main goal with the program was to educate people on heifer development, various areas. So we look at nutrition, we look at the reproduction side, the pre-breeding exam, which is very important. And so when you think about heifer development, as I was preparing for this, I thought of something to say really is basically when we look at successful heifer development, we look at developing heifers so that they breed early in the breeding season and therefore calve early in the calving season. And by doing that, they're more likely to stay in the herd a long time. And so
we want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Give your cattle platinum protection with Virbac Bovagen Platinum Vaccines. Start your protection at us.virbac.com/platinum protection. Data shows most cattle don't get enough vitamin D, which can impact health and performance. High D from DSM Firmenich can help improve cattle's vitamin D status. Be proactive with Cattle Active. Visit proearthanimalhealth.com today. Lallemand Animal Nutrition offers microbial solutions to boost animal welfare and performance.
Welcome to the Beef Podcast. I'm your host, Brandi Buzzard, and it's my pleasure to bring you the latest trends and issues from the best and brightest minds in the beef industry. Today, we are joined by Dr. Patrick Davis, Extension Livestock Field Specialist with the University of Missouri. Dr. Davis earned his master's from Oklahoma State and his PhD from the University of Missouri, investigating factors that influence residual feed intake and the effects of diet formulation on feed efficiency. I'm looking forward to talking to him today about heifer development, a fast approaching breeding season, and much more. So with that, we'll dive right in. Dr. Davis, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
Yeah. Well, to start off with, if you could bring us up to speed on your background and how you got started in the beef industry, that would be great. I know I read like a very small amount about your background and your career, but if you want to fill us in some more, that'd be wonderful.
So, I grew up raising cattle, grew up on a diversified livestock operation, raising cattle and hogs, had a purebred herd of Angus cattle growing up. Went to school at the University of Missouri, got my bachelor's there, spent some time working in the nutrition labs, actually, there at the University of Missouri. And then, like you said, went to Oklahoma State University, spent some time down there doing a master's program, worked with a fall calving herd, actually, spent more time on the reproduction side, but really nutritional-based reproduction. We looked at fall calving herd, two times a year of fall calving, and also looked at feeding a probiotic and seeing if that influenced markers related to reproduction, blood metabolites. And then made my way back to University of Missouri, Columbia, and got a PhD there, working mostly in ruminant nutrition, working with residual feed intake, one measurement of feed efficiency. Also did some feedlot testing as well, and looking at amino acid energy ratio and how that in changing that in the diet and how that influences performance in cattle. And just kind of got a lot of experience just feeding cattle from that standpoint. And then in addition to that, also did a lot of work with residual feed intake and different things that influence residual feed intake. And so that's kind of my educational background. Then did a postdoc at the Meat Animal Research Center in Clay Center, Nebraska, worked with the group up there and looked at feed efficiency, growth, and looking at different parameters there and measuring that, and also looked at some stuff with sheep as well, and so. Then I made my way back to basically made my way back and kind of in the current position that I'm in now as a regional livestock specialist with University of Missouri Extension. And of course, have been doing that for about 13 years, working and have worked with a lot of programs with a lot of producers. But my main background, kind of educating them on feeding cattle, management of cattle. Mm-hmm. You spend some time in the small ruminant side, but mostly managing and feeding cattle. Work a lot with our Show Me Select replacement heifer program, where I'm coordinator in Southwest Missouri for that. And so that's kind of, we're in that time of year where we're doing a lot of work, either preg checking heifers or pre-breeding exams on heifer, I should say that differently, but preg checking heifers that are going to calve in the fall, or pre-breeding exam on heifers that are going to calve a year from now. So basically, we're kind of into that. And then I also actually work with a program, a steer feed out program that has been going on in Missouri for many, many years, where we work with producers on a small scale feeding steers, getting performance data back on those steers, and also carcass data. And so we actually started that up this year, working on that. And so in a little different way. And so we're doing that as well. So yeah, I've worked with a lot of producers in the heifer development area, in the feeding area, whether it's feeding cows, whether it's feeding growing cattle, stocker calves, or feedlot cattle. So.
Okay. So you mentioned the Show Me Select heifer replacement program. That's a really kind of a really small world. I in a previous career and role, I worked really closely with Dr. Patterson, who kind of started that. And so that's just a really small world. I think that is a wonderful program. Would you like mind explaining to our listeners what that program is, like what it is and what it's about, and just kind of all the pieces of it? Because I think it's fabulous.
I'll try to do that. It's a very complex program, but the main goal with the program was to educate people on heifer development, various areas. So we look at nutrition, we look at the reproduction side, the pre-breeding exam, which is very important. And so when you think about heifer development, as I was preparing for this, I thought of something to say, really, is basically when we look at successful heifer development, we look at developing heifers so that they breed early in the breeding season and therefore calve early in the calving season. And by doing that, they're more likely to stay in the herd a long time. And so that's really when we think about heifer development, we think about this, the Show Me Select Heifer program, that is important to that program. And so we look at nutritional development of those heifers. One of the important parts of it is the pre-breeding exam. Within that pre-breeding exam, it typically happens, and we work with a veterinarian on that. And so there's a lot of different parts to this and groups of people. We've got the extension, the livestock field specialists with MU Extension that work with the producers on the program. We've got veterinarians that are involved in the program. And so at that pre-breeding exam, basically the livestock specialists work with the producer, collect the data, and the veterinarians do the pre-breeding exam. And there's two things we're looking at there. We're looking at reproductive tract score, which is basically how mature the reproductive tract is. We're also looking at pelvic area. And so that's how large the pelvic area is. And we want that pelvic area to be 150 centimeters or greater at pre-breeding, which is roughly 30 to 60 days prior to the breeding season. That reproductive tract score, we would like threes, fours, and fives. Mm-hmm. Those heifers are more likely to mature to the point where they should become pregnant early in the breeding season. That's what we want to see there. We also look at body condition score at that time. We want those heifers at pre-breeding to be roughly a body condition score six, and that's a good smooth appearance throughout. Body condition score is the fat cover or the condition of the animal on a 1 to 9 scale, 1 being extremely thin, 9 being extremely fat. And so kind of in the middle of the scale a little bit of a six is kind of where we want to be at pre-breeding. And then, so that's the pre-breeding part. Then the next major part that we look at is preg check time. And, right. and pregnancy checking needs to be done roughly within the program needs to be done roughly 90 days after the beginning of the breeding season. And so the reason for that is by doing that, we get as accurate as possible days pregnant. So that gives us a pretty accurate calving date. And that's important to producers because you on these heifers, they're probably going to require a little more attention
right.
at calving time. And so we want to know when they're going to calve. So we have a good idea of that. A couple of other things that you can do if you preg check within that 90-day window is fetal sex the calves, which that's something new. We also kind of, it's not a requirement, but most of the producers most of the veterinarians that I work with now, ultrasound preg check, which allows you to fetal sex. That's of interest to the producer, whether they're keeping the heifers or selling the heifers. So that's kind of the deal at preg check time. We're also very, very interested in the bull that they're breeding those heifers to. And so it's very important to breed those heifers to a calving ease bull, obviously. And within the Show Me Select Heifer program, we've got requirements and guidelines on the bulls that we use. And so on AI bulls, we want those bulls to be high accuracy, which basically means We want their EPDs to be highly accurate, which expected progeny difference is basically is a number that evaluates how those calves' progeny will perform out of that bull. And so the higher that calving ease expected progeny difference number, the more likely those calves are to be born with ease. And so we look at those bulls on that. On our AI bulls, we want them to be highly accurate. Usually that accuracy number on most breeds is 0.6 or higher. On, I believe it's just Hereford, we allow a 0.5 accuracy on those AI bulls. On our natural service bulls, we want those bulls to have genomic enhanced EPDs, which right. a lot of bulls that sell now have those. Uh-huh. But that's a requirement so that we get as highly accurate as possible on the EPDs. And so not to go into a lot more depth on that because on those numbers, but basically we've decided a threshold as far as what's a calving ease bull and what's not. And so some other things that we kind of promote within the program is, and I would say this as far as successful heifer development is tighter breeding windows, mm-hmm. 60 days or less, which leads to a tighter calving window. Because basically, when we talk about heifer development, like I said initially, we want these heifers to breed early in the breeding season so they calve early in the calving season. They stay in the herd a long time. If we string out these heifers from a breeding standpoint and they calve later, they're more likely to fall out of the herd. And even if they stay yeah. in the herd, they're always going to be calving in the last half of the calving season, which means yeah. less pounds of calf that they wean over their lifetime. So
I know it's really complex. I can't say enough good things about the program. When I used to work at the Red Angus Association of America, and we came and we actually did an episode of American Rancher about the Show Me Select Heifer Replacement Program. And then I did a series of articles in the Red Angus magazine about it. I mean, it's a wonderful program. And when you stop and look back at the protocols from a 10,000 foot viewpoint, like it all just makes a massive amount of common sense on like why you're setting heifers up to do these things, right? So they breed back earlier, they calve earlier, they wean off more calf, like pounds of calf. You're not wasting time and resources on heifers that don't have a large enough pelvic area. Like it's just a whole lot of really good management practices all rolled into one program. And I cannot say enough really wonderful things about it. I just think it's wonderful.
With the price of cattle right now with heifers and, and things. There's a lot of common sense in it, but there's also a lot of tools that allow for selection that allows you to pick those best heifers.
Yeah.
And to get rid of those others because they're worth a lot of money right now because the feedlot wants them just as much as the heifer development bin wants them.
Yeah. So it helps you make better breeding decisions on those cows in your herd. Like if you have a cow that keeps giving you heifers that aren't meeting your pelvic requirements or aren't
right.
Mm-hmm. Other things, like that's a good indicator of like, hey, maybe this cow needs to be transitioned out of the herd. It's just a wonderful management focus that can be expanded out into so many different arms of your business. I can't say enough nice things about it.
Actually, you brought up a point there. So we've ran into that issue before where we've had a period of time where a set of heifers have consistently been small. I've actually been working with some producers on that where we look at the bulls, and sometimes you can pick those bulls. So one thing that's sometimes if we use calving ease bulls and don't make sure that we still have the growth and performance in the rest of the part of the pedigree, in the rest of the part of the genetics and the EPDs and the performance, we can potentially produce heifers that have small pelvic areas. And so it's one of those things where if you are having a lot of small pelvic area heifers, sometimes you can track that back to a bull. Not to say that it couldn't be a cow, but a lot of times that has happened where we see a group of heifers come through and we'll see. And I've seen this with producers I've worked with, and we like look at the bulls, and if you look at each of the small pelvic area heifers, it happens to track back to one bull. And so it's just something to keep in mind when you're producing heifers as well as to is calving ease is important. I agree. Nobody complains about having to pull too many calves. I mean, it just doesn't happen. I got that from somebody else, but yeah, nobody ever sits around and complains about that. But at the same time, in addition to calving ease, you also need to look at the whole genetic components of those bulls and of those females and make sure that you're not over selecting in one area, say calving ease, because that could lead to some issues down the road
in
other areas. So.
Yeah, single trait selection is not a good path to go down by any means. Just a follow up on the show me select there. Are you with the market the way it is? Are you seeing fewer heifers devoted, fewer heifers being committed to the program, or fewer people enrolling heifers in the program? And therefore, are you seeing fewer heifers show up at the sale? Because that's something that you didn't touch on. And I understand it's a large program, but, there's a sale component to it. Are you seeing fewer heifers go all the way through because the feed yard wants them?
We have been the last few years in my area. I won't speak for all the areas, but I know in our area we have been, and it's a combination of factors. Obviously, the feedlot wants them, but we've went through 2 to 3 years of drought, depending on where you're at in Southwest Missouri, and it's been hard to keep those heifers back because the feedlot wants them and because of the feed resources, and so we are. We're doing a little better than we were a few years ago. I think our outlook looks better as we've been visiting with producers this spring in pre-breeding exams. I think we're looking better. Things are going upward from that regard. I don't know if we're truly back to rebuilding the herds, but I have had a few more phone calls than the people that I work with here in Southwest Missouri. Had a lot more phone calls on heifer development and enrolling heifers in the program. And so I think maybe we're starting to move towards starting to increase those numbers again. But yeah, the last 2 to 3 years we've had lower numbers, and there's a lot of factors there, but primarily the fact we've been drought and It's hard to keep those heifers at home when the stockers and the feedlot operations want to pay what they're paying for them. So,
well, to get back to the heifer development side of it, because I know that's a lot of what you work in and specialize in, for producers who are maybe just new to developing heifers or who just are looking to improve their, you know, their development skill set, I guess, for lack of a better word, you know, what are some really important things for people to keep in mind to be successful in heifer development?
I mentioned a lot of them there as we go through the program, but nutrition's important. Body size. So one of the things I didn't mention, and this has been around for a long time as far as kind of a management thing, is you want those heifers to be about 55 to 65% of their mature body weight at breeding time. Mm-hmm. And so you need to develop those heifers. And that's one of the things that we look at pre-breeding time is weight, whether it's visual or you can kind of tell size wise, but visual, I mean, identify those bigger, older heifers. And that's another thing goes back to what I was talking about earlier is, those heifers, when you develop them, if they breed early, they calve early. Well, then their progeny. So it's a continuing effect, I guess you might say, in that their progeny then calve early, or if they're born earlier, they breed earlier, they calve earlier. And so there's a lot of research behind that basically says that if you can get these females. And so when you're selecting heifers, you want to probably select those heifers that are older, heavier within your heifer pool.
Yeah.
And so those later maturing ones, those younger ones, those lighter ones, those are probably heifers that aren't going to work as well. Now, not to say they won't, but that's the thing is body size is important. Because the heavier they are, the older they are, the more likely they are to be cycling there at pre-breeding time. And I say cycling, I mean, fours and fives on that reproductive tract score are heifers that are cycling. Mm-hmm. Threes are about a month away. And okay. So when we do pre-breeding exam, that's kind of the process there. We want those heifers to be threes, fours, and fives. If you've got ones and twos, not to say that it won't happen, because it does happen that those heifers do actually get bred during the breeding season, but mm-hmm. it's very, very less likely. And so, and then, like I said, we want the other thing with those threes, fours, and fives is in a shorter breeding season, they're more likely to be cycling and get bred during that breeding season versus if you extend it out longer. So.
Yeah. You mentioned nutrition, and that's vitally, I mean, everything is important when it comes to developing heifers, getting everything bred, but nutrition is important. Like if your heifers are too thin, they're not going to have any extra calories to devote to getting pregnant and growing a calf. So we're leading up here. We're getting closer to breeding season for spring calving herds. So what should people be thinking about in terms of nutrition right now, like as you go that step up?
Yeah. And so I always tell producers to kind of look at the cows. I mean, they'll tell you if they need more, and body condition score. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. They need to be at fives and sixes at breeding time. That's when you're going to see your ideal pregnancy rates on body condition, which six, I said, was a good smooth appearance throughout. The animal, not too fat, not too thin. Five, you're going to see the last two ribs mm-hmm. of the animal, and that's kind of a five. You see much more than that, that's going to be a four. And so that's getting a little too thin. And yeah. I know as we're coming out of winter, we probably are going to see some thinner cows. Part of that is just the fact that we've been through 2-3 years drought, which there's a lot of places been dry, obviously.
Yeah.
Going west, they're dry. But And so sometimes those cows come out of the winter a little thin, and that's we're waiting on grass too. Once grass comes, then so
my cows are waiting on grass by finding holes in the fences that I did not know existed.
Well, and I will tell you also when we think about, like I said, those cows are waiting on grass, you want to make sure there's plenty of grass out there for them to eat before you turn them out, because that's one thing about these spring calving cows is they're going to go out there and they're going to run around looking for grass, and they're going to lose just as much condition as they gain.
Yeah, they're walking around looking for it.
Yeah, so it's important, and also holding those cows up, holding them up in kind of a sacrifice area or something just a little longer can help that forage production going forward. Let you get a good stand of forage before you start grazing it, because for one, it'll help the forage, and two, it'll help the nutrition of the cow, because they'll actually get some good forage there. I know when you start seeing green grass, you're tired of feeding, you want to let them out, but
yeah, people are chomping at the bit to get them out, but
you need to hold them up a little longer. So
yeah, for sure. We do a lot of rotational grazing, and you know, I think the longer you can get that, like the more stand, the better stand of grass you have before you kick them out, the longer you can take them on that before you rotate, if you're in that mindset and let those roots really develop and so that they go throughout the grazing season. But it sure is hard when you've been feeding silage or rolling hay out all winter. And this was a bit, or particularly in my area, Kansas, has been a particularly wet and not fun winter, or just super cold. And so people, are really, and the cows and the people both are just ready to let us out of here so that we can go graze.
Well, we've had a little snow in our area this winter, but which is good. We haven't had snow really for the last few years, but it's just, you see the temperatures, you see the grass, and it's like, they need to get out there and eat, but it's just like, you want to make sure. I know in our area with most of our cool season grasses, we want 4 to 6, you need at least 4 to 6 inches and probably more like 8 to 10.
Yeah.
And then if you're in the prairie areas, that grass needs to be a lot taller. Some other things to think about as we're going into that breeding season is, and I do a lot of work with bulls. Well, I don't do a lot of work with bulls, but we have a program that we've done breeding soundness exams with veterinarians and collect data on, and that's an important thing. And actually, we did a lot of those in March, and March, April, and May is really good times to do that. Obviously, breeding soundness exam on bull, you can do a lot of things with that. It needs to be done about 30 to 60 days for the breeding season. I know some people are a little closer to the breeding season before they do it than that, but try to do it then, because if you have a bull that comes up bad, that does give you a little time to get one before the breeding season starts.
Yeah.
But with doing that, you do a lot of things there. Is you check the semen quality, you check the structure of feet and legs, everything on the bull, and then body condition. And again, like I said, that body condition, again, needs to be about a 5 or 6 as that bull enters the breeding pasture. Probably a 6 would be better, especially on young bulls. All of that stuff, because semen quality might be good, but if the bull can't get around to the females, it ain't going to work. So you need to check semen quality. You need to check the structure. You need to check all of those things to make sure the bull's sound.
Yes.
It's also a good time to vaccinate those bulls. That's another thing. I spend a lot on heifer development, but we don't do a lot of, I don't spend a lot of time talking to producers about pre-breeding exams on their cows, because there really isn't a lot, because, I mean, they're either bred or they're not. But,
right.
But it's during that 30 to 60 day window for the breeding season, good time to get the bulls up and look at them. It's also a good time to get the cows up and the bulls and vaccinate them. Those yearly repro shots are good. And then basically, by doing those vaccinations, parasite control, all those things, by doing that, that just kind of keeps the health of the herd good. Another thing, if you're bringing new bulls in, trichomoniasis testing is very important on new bulls. I know it says that virgin bulls, you don't have to do that. I do it. I mean, it's a little extra. It's a cost, obviously, but sometimes I'd rather pay that cost than have that issue in my herd.
Yeah.
I mean, new bulls come into the herd, trichomoniasis testing, make sure they've been tested before they go in with cow herd, because that's a reproductive disease that you don't want in your herd, because you can definitely wreck the herd with that. Trying to think. I know in our BSC clinic or our BSC days that I work with the veterinarians on, we look at foot scoring, we look at mm-hmm. feet and legs, and so in addition to semen quality and body condition, and so. But that's a good time. This is the time of year to do that.
Yeah.
And get ready for that breeding season. So
you brought up a lot of really good points, but two that are kind of sticking out is the foot scoring, like not just from a cow perspective, but from a bull perspective. Like if your bull can't get around, your feet are bad, they can't get around. It doesn't matter if he passes the BSE test and if he's trick free, can't walk, he's not going to get much bred. And then also you make a really good point. My husband and I, we have a seed stock operation. So we think about vaccinating bulls, but that's important for your herd bulls, just to remember that as well. And I feel like I don't hear as much about that in industry publications or, trade pubs or something like that, or from your local, livestock association, that it's important, but I feel like it's not talked about as enough, is that health management, vaccinations of your bulls, for sure.
Well, I mean, I look at it from the standpoint is, especially if you're bringing new bulls in, if they got something, I mean, there's a lot of diseases out there that just float in and can really mess up the reproduction of your herd. And transferring parasites, those kind of things. But one thing you brought, the foot scoring. And so two things there I'll elaborate on. One is, the structure. We talk about, or I talk with producers about the feet and the legs. There's more. I mean, it was a year ago or so, I believe. They brought some bulls through and one had a bad shoulder. So we look at feet and legs, and then sometimes you'll see one comes through with a bad shoulder or something. In our data collection, we don't really touch on that. Mm-hmm. I just look at the foot scoring and there's the claw set and the foot angle. But you look at that, that's part of it. The other thing is, if you're keeping replacements, whether it's bulls or heifers, out of these bulls, and you've got bad feet and leg, and you got bad feet in your bulls, I've seen this. I've seen it in cows too. Mm-hmm. Whatever you've got there passes on, and so in addition to the fact you want good sound footed bulls so they can do their job, you also, you're keeping progeny out of those bulls. You want good sound footed calves too. Absolutely. And if you find bulls, and there's a lot of bulls sold nowadays that probably shouldn't be sold because of their feet and legs. But as I see them from time to time, but you just think about the progeny you're keeping out of that bull, especially if you're keeping progeny. Now, if you're not, that's not as big of an issue to you, but
right.
I see it both ways in the fact that, them doing their job, that affects them doing their job. But also the progeny, that, because it might be a minor thing, the foot scoring, the foot problems might be a minor thing. I mean, I see a lot of feet that are just minor in an issue, but mm-hmm. minor issues add up over time, and that can be a bigger issue down the road. So
I feel like the only reason that you should not care, quote unquote, not care about the feet of your bull is if you're, you know, you're selling your calves at weaning and they're going to go to the feed yard. So like they're not going to be reproducing whether they're a heifer or a bull, but it, you're right. There's not enough bulls that, that are culled for that reason for their feed. Cause yeah, you may sell them and they're not your problem, but like that person you sold that bull to, they now have this, you know, questionable footed bull that's going to pass that on. I mean, it has a repercussion far beyond your own ranch. And like, you know, there's whole breeds of cattle, you know, whole that can be messed up, not just like that ranch, but like bad feet. If enough producers aren't culling based on bad feet or don't care about bad feet or aren't knowledgeable about it, like that resonates out into the entire breed and can affect the saleability of an entire breed's, you know, bull battery. And so it really is important. It's that, you know, everything starts at the feet and you build from ground up. And I think that not, there needs to be maybe more focus on that just across the industry.
It's time for our famous three.
Is stress affecting your bottom line? Even routine handling, inclement weather, weaning, and dietary changes can significantly lower the rumen pH, causing cortisol levels to spike. Cortisol not only compromises the immune system, but also suppresses normal appetite and feed consumption. The solution? Cattle Active. Increase production and reduce the impacts of stress on your cattle for cents a day. Cattle Active restores the balance naturally. Want to learn more how a feeding program, including Cattle Active, can improve both profits and herd health? Visit us today at proearthanimalhealth.com. Be proactive with Cattle Active.
Well, we're reached that point of our episode where we ask all of our guests the same three closing questions. And I did give Dr. Davis a heads up on these, so he's not, you know, caught out of left field. But the first one is, what is your favorite beef or cattle related resource? It can be a book, it can be a website, a person, you know, favorite beef or cattle related resource.
Well, for this particular program, I mean, we've talked a lot about the Show Me Select Heifer program, and they have a really nice website at the University of Missouri Extension, University of Missouri website. And so, I mean, searching that website would provide a lot of information. We've also got a lot of resources. Dr. Jordan Thomas there a couple of years ago put together a lot of resources from a reproduction standpoint, from a cattle management standpoint. We've also got Dr. Eric Bailey, who's our State Beef Cattle Nutrition Extension Specialist. He's been involved in some of those resources as well. I'm trying to think who else. Those two stand out to me, but we've got a lot of resources there that basically go over a lot of the stuff I've talked about today. And so kind of searching that University of Missouri Extension beef website and beef cattle reproduction and things like that, you'll find a lot of the information that we've talked about today.
Perfect. Well, that is I can vouch for that website and that resource. The University of Missouri's beef extension website and just program is just absolutely wonderful. And I say that as a case stater. So the case state does some great things, but that it's just a wonderful website. It's like extension.missouri.edu, and then you can go to beef. I will say though, Eric Bailey is a case stater, so we can claim him before he came to Mizzou. He was a classmate of mine and my husband's when we were in grad school and as well. So, but that is a wonderful, wonderful resource, and I highly encourage people to go seek that out. On the other side of that coin, what is your favorite non-beef or cattle-related book or one that you are currently reading?
I know you asked me this question ahead of time, and I was like, I don't really read a lot. So I spend a lot of time listening to sports and things like that. So, I mean, I listen to that kind of stuff, but I don't read a lot of other books or anything like that. So. That sorry, I can't help you there. But.
No, that's all right. That's okay. Everybody's different. Not everything is for everyone, and that's totally okay. All right. And the third question is, when you think of someone you admire or look up to, what's a characteristic they possess that has led them to be successful? And again, you don't have to name the person, but just like a characteristic that you find admirable in successful people.
Well, I most of the people around me that as I've went through college, growing up, hard work. I mean, we worked all the time, and that was important. And just really thinking, and I find myself a lot nowadays just really thinking through things. And a lot of people that I've worked with over the years really taught me to think through things and kind of have your opinions and research those opinions and try to be the best possible to the people I'm working with. And that's important. And that, to me, that's what I try to do every day. Is I don't know everything. I don't have all the answers. But I most of the people I work with, I try to find those people that do and can answer those questions and then get back to them. And so that's and really the goal within my profession or my job is, and somebody said it, and I didn't come up with this, but I heard somebody say it. I was like, well, that's what we do all the time is we help. And in this case, be beef cattle producers, but farmers in general make their operations successful. And so that's what I try to do every day. And so, and over the years, people taught me some things and I try to really taught me hard work. And that's, and trying to do what needs to be done. So, yeah.
The whole, I don't know the answer, but I can help you find it. You know, I'm not being an expert on everything. I think that's such a valuable mindset because it's unrealistic for any one person to be an expert on everything. But knowing where you can send someone or knowing an expert in that field, I think is really, really valuable. Being able to be a good resource for people is super valuable and important. So, well, that is all the time we have for the questions today, Dr. Davis. I just want to thank you again. I really appreciate you coming on today and sharing your expertise and knowledge around heifer development and the Show Me Select program and breeding protocols and all sorts of other things. We could have kept talking about cows for a lot longer if we had more time, but thank you again for joining us. If listeners have questions for you, want to learn more about our discussion today, where can they do that? Do you just want to, should we direct the extension website?
Yeah. I'm more than happy to answer questions. You can contact me. My cell phone or my phone number is 417-955-0287. That's actually my cell phone number. My office number is 417-276-3313. You can also email me at Davis. That's D-A-V-I-S. M as in Michael, B as in Patrick, at Missouri. That's Missouri spelled out, .edu. And I'm more than happy. You can email me or you can call me. Send me a text. I'm more than happy to answer the questions that you want.
Thank you, Dr. Davis, for being here. And to our audience, thank you for tuning in with us. And we will meet you back here next week on the Beef Podcast.
Thank you.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.